Once upon a time, there was a really big bank that played like it was small, easygoing, as friendly and familiar as your neighbor.
Okay, you're all set with your WaMu free checking account.
Hey, quick question. I'm opening a bakery down the street. You guys do free business checking?
Absolutely. We even have small business specialists, so if there's anything you need, we've got your back.
Sweet.
So are you ready to get started?
Oh, sign me up.
Small business banking. We've got your back.
Woohoo!
WaMu.
WaMu. Washington Mutual. Nobody had their back. Washington Mutual is no more. It went down like the Titanic during the financial crisis, but it seems like a million years ago. And WaMu's bankruptcy plan was approved by a judge quietly only last February. Wall Street Journal reporter Kirsten Grind followed the WaMu story from the beginning. She chronicles the bank's rise and fall in her new book, The Lost Bank. And it is quite literally The Lost Bank. It's the story of Washington Mutual, the biggest bank failure in American history. Kirsten, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You know, one of the amazing things about this story is that WaMu, for all of its size, was still what's called a thrift bank. Can you describe, first of all, what that is and how it was key to the culture that ultimately undermined WaMu?
Absolutely. So WaMu was what's known as a savings and loan bank, so actually a thrift bank, as it was called. And it started as this very small, friendly institution. It was known as the friend of the family in the Pacific Northwest. And then it grew into this gigantic behemoth, basically. But the reason, the fact that it was a savings and loan is important because it used to be so connected to its customers. Its customers would come in, it would give you a mortgage, it would give you a checking account, and that completely changed, even though it remained a thrift towards the end.
And, you know, it's very much like the movie about, you know, the building and loan. I mean, it's very much that, you know, neighborhood style. What advantages financially do thrifts have, at least in the way that they're regulated or in what they're permitted to do, that also in part helped to create the perfect storm that brought down the bank in the end?
Right. Well, thrifts were supposed to be these institutions that were really customer focused, right? And so they were supposed to be that savings and loan that you saw in the 1920s and the 1930s, and that's what they were historically. But also because of their charters, they had to make a certain number of mortgages, so as required by law. So that obviously did not help them during the housing crisis.
And let's add one more piece to this story, which, of course, is why this is such an interesting narrative of the financial sector in the United States. And it's very much different from the investment banks and the Goldman Sachs that we typically follow. We're talking with Wall Street reporter Kirsten Grind. Her book, The Lost Bank, is the story of Washington Mutual, the biggest bank failure in American history. How did WaMu fare during the S&L crisis? Remember the S&L crisis of the 1980s?
Absolutely. So actually, the S&L crisis was terrific for WaMu. That was its growth period. The bank was very strong. It was snapping up banks all across the country. The S&L crisis allowed it to become the country's largest savings and loan. And it was only after that that it really started to go downhill, when its CEO decided that he wanted the bank to be the country's largest mortgage lender. And so then you saw its advertising shift from friend of the family to the power of yes, which is that we will make your mortgage as quickly as possible for any price.
And let's tell this story as the story of two very, very different CEOs. Give us a quick bio of the two really main characters in this piece.
Absolutely. So this is a very tragic story. WaMu's CEO, Kerry Killinger, he was at the helm for 18 years, one of the country's longest running CEOs. He took over a bank, was a very humble guy from Iowa. You know, he grew it into this fantastic institution, did a great job for a number of years. And then you see him sort of start to believe his own press. The analysts and the media loved him, and he suddenly sort of became obsessed with the trappings of a CEO. And this happened just at the same time that they were becoming one of the country's largest mortgage lenders. So as he was sort of flying around the country on his corporate jet, WaMu was making all these terrible mortgages.
And, you know, let's get to the incentive piece of this because it's been profiled before. Here's Andrew Ross Sorkin, who's the author of the very famous book and now the HBO original film Too Big to Fail, describing what was going on in the mortgage crisis.
You'd say to yourself, why would you make a loan to people you don't think are going to pay it back? Because you're going to be on the hook. Well, guess what? The banks weren't on the hook. They would actually make the loan, and then they'd go find 20 other people on the other side of the planet in some cases, and they chopped the loan up and handed it around. And so they had no incentive. They didn't care anymore about whether you were good for the money or not, so long as you could sign on the dotted line so that they could collect the fee.
That's Andrew Ross Sorkin there describing sort of the principle of securitized mortgages. But in the case of WaMu, Kirsten Grind, they were sort of the blue whale of doing this. Describe what happened.
They were. I mean, so they would take – WaMu used to be this bank where you would walk into a branch and they would make you a mortgage. But they transformed into basically a clearinghouse where they were buying up mortgages and selling them in pieces as whole mortgages all across the country. So these terrible loans ended up in investment portfolios all over the world. And by that, they were offloading all of this risk. And at the bottom level was these mortgage brokers and loan officers who were so far removed from this process and were just being paid an enormous amount of money. They just sort of thought, well, we know we're making bad loans, but, you know, so it seems like something's going to happen to them somewhere along the line. I couldn't believe how many people I spoke to that talked about that.
So take us into really the gut check that is your book here, where you describe how it unravels and how quickly it unravels and just how terrifying it was to have been in the middle of that whole thing.
Absolutely. So my goal with this book was to allow the reader to see this very, very slow train wreck. I wanted them to be in this pot of water that was slowly growing hotter, because you can see the financial crisis coming, you can see the warning signs, and then all of a sudden it's too late. And you see the bank suffering from these epic quiet bank runs circa It's a Wonderful Life, right? And you can see how it was coming, but yet no one could stop it. And it was a terrible feeling inside the bank even.
So it was like it's a Wonderful Life meets plate tectonics, because it was happening on such a giant scale.
You know, and it was kept so quiet and out of the media. I mean, even now people don't realize the extent of the bank runs that WaMu suffered. It was billions of dollars. In one day, the bank lost almost $3 billion in customer deposits. I talked to one of the employees who was sort of in the center of all of this at the bank, and it was just, I mean, imagine being at the center of the country's largest bank run probably since the 1930s. It was just sheer panic.
Whose emotional sort of makeup was most compromised in this, of all the characters you talked to before we go?
You know, what's interesting about this book is you can really see how very rational thinkers make very terrible decisions. So a lot of the times, you know, people were compromised, and you can see how that sort of happens. It's a very interesting story.
Who said in the end, all right, we got to close up shop, we're done?
Well, that was the federal regulators. And actually, the sale of WaMu, the seizure of it and sale to J.P. Morgan Chase is actually very controversial. Just the way it was handled. J.P. Morgan Chase had always wanted WaMu. The federal regulators moved in, arguably at a time when WaMu could have still saved itself despite its terrible condition. So that's another controversial aspect.
And I love it. It's J.P. Morgan Chase that gets WaMu. WaMu, who you described, lost $3 billion in one day. And J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon is on Capitol Hill today trying to explain his $3 billion loss.
Absolutely. It's so ironic, actually, because J.P. Morgan came in saying, oh, we would never be – I mean, WaMu is a terrible bank. We would never take such risks. And here they are today.
A fantastic story, and really every American should read about it because of the fact that it was a savings and loan. It's really the fabric of the financial system unraveling in The Lost Bank, the story of Washington Mutual, the biggest bank failure in American history. Wall Street Journal reporter Kirsten Grind, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.